Hello, this is Robert Ambrose, KPTZ board president and host of Rhythm Connection. Like you, I'm waiting to hear Dr. Locke's weekly COVID-19 update. I depend on KPTZ to hear this crucial information because it allows me to better understand how the virus is affecting our community. It also helps me gauge when I might see my distant new grandson. You'd depend on KPTZ to hear Dr. Locke too, and KPTZ depends on you to keep broadcasting. Please consider clicking on the Donate Now button at kptz.org to give us your support for our efforts. Thank you.
KPTZ now joins the Board of County Commissioners' weekly meeting in progress for this week's public health updates, held as a virtual meeting during the COVID pandemic. Jefferson County Public Health Officer Dr. Tom Locke and Department of Emergency Management Director Willie Bentz will now brief our commissioners and you, our KPTZ listeners.
The number one goal, right, is to keep recycling around. So I think it's really a big step forward.
Great. Well, we have just 30 seconds left. I'll say there's an important bill in front of the House this week that will be considering whether to identify the Sushisaurus as the Washington State dinosaur. So if anyone has opinions about that, they should be prepared to weigh in. And with that, it's 9:45. Welcome, Dr. Locke. I saw Willie joined us as well. Good morning. And welcome to KPTZ listeners. Continue to hear such gratitude that Dr. Locke and Willie Bentz join us every morning for this. So thank you for being here, and hand it over to you, Dr. Locke.
Okay, well thank you, and good morning. Starting with the epidemiology, after a holiday surge, we're now seeing actually a decrease in cases nationally. The average daily number of new cases in the U.S. is now around 170,000, and that's down 33% from where it was 2 weeks ago. So there's been some improvement there. Washington State, as we look at the last month, had this kind of double surge. So there was a surge in December, it dropped off, then another surge in January, and over the last 2 weeks, that's been going down too. So a 37% decrease, and average case rates in Washington State are at around 1,600 new cases diagnosed each day. During these surges in December and January, we saw the highest rates of hospitalization for COVID-19 that we've ever had during the pandemic in Washington State, although it did not exceed the capacity of the hospitals to provide that care. In Jefferson County, we've actually seen a bit of a decrease. So in the last 2 weeks, the last 2 weeks there were 16 cases, and then the following week there were 6 cases, so for a total of 22, and that drops our case rate to 69 per 100,000. So that's down from 119 per 100,000 the prior reporting period, and our test positivity is running about 3.23%. Clallam County's a bit higher, although still one of the lowest in the state, at 134 per 100,000 with 6.4% positivity. Kitsap is 195 per 100,000 with 9.6% positivity. And Mason County is 246 per 100,000 with 13.1% positivity. And the state is now, the comparable state number is 462 cases per 100,000 statewide and 10.7% positivity statewide. And then I was going to say the final thing data-wise, The state is now on their COVID sites publishing this roadmap to recovery data that is updated each month. So currently the Northwest region is what we've been named, is two of the four indicators are elevated. So case rates are up 24% in our region, and hospital rates are up 44%. So that was the trend we were seeing before, but there's a bit of delay on the state's data.
Does it look better to you? Does it pass the sniff test at this point? Is it reconciled?
Yes, it's starting. Correspond better with the other data sources we have, because we were puzzled. We saw case rates going up around the region, but it wasn't reflected in those rates. And then some bad news, but something we totally expected, and that is the B117 variant, SARS-CoV variant that originated in Britain, that has been detected now in Washington State. We felt that was inevitable, but they did detect a case in Snohomish County and one in Pierce County, and there is surveillance going on for that statewide. It's not more dangerous. You're no more likely to get complications from it, but it does appear to be about 50% more contagious. So it underscores the need to do all of the transmission control type things. To no great surprise, most of the KPTZ questions this week were about vaccines and availability. And so I thought it might be good just to summarize a bunch of the questions just with some general information about the vaccines. And then I'll try to answer a few of the specific KPTZ questions. But there are now two different vaccines that are available in Jefferson County. The lion's share of the vaccine has been the Pfizer vaccine, which has really stringent handling requirements, and the hospital's been managing that. But we are seeing more and more of the Moderna vaccine. Both of them are two-dose regimens. So there were several questions about, are we gonna extend the interval or go just with one dose protection? And the answer to those is no. There's no national plan, there's no state plan to deviate from what we learned from the clinical trials. And that is these vaccines are highly effective if you give two doses at a three-week interval with the Pfizer vaccine and a four-week interval with the Moderna. And we really don't have good data as to how effective they are after only one dose. It's probably 50% or less, and that's just not good enough. So the plan is to stick with the authorized protocols. It's important to understand with COVID vaccines, states, and specifically the governor's office, controls the priorities, that controls the allocation. We don't control that at a local level. We're really not authorized to deviate from the state priorities. That being said, we can and do what's called sub-prioritization. So, if for instance the vaccine is anyone 65 and older is eligible for it, not only are we allowed, but it's really encouraged and it's best practices to start with the people with the highest need, the people who are most likely to have life-threatening complications. And that's why Jefferson Healthcare has started with the oldest patients and moving down the list. And I totally support that. What we are trying to do in this early stage is save lives. And we save lives the best by vaccinating the people who are most at risk of losing their lives. And that is you know, especially people over age 80. But currently we're above 75, and we will move down the list as rapidly as possible. Both vaccines are excellent vaccines. Very good safety profiles that have been confirmed now in it's probably approaching 20 million people who have been vaccinated in the U.S. now. And so they appear to be both very safe and very effective. And there's an intense demand for the vaccine that it will take months and months to satisfy. And this is where we have to kind of have a reality check, is that Washington State is currently getting about 100,000 doses of vaccine per week. And initially it was not evenly allocated. Most of the initial vaccine went to the areas that were prepared to take it and use it quickly. And the Olympic Peninsula was one of those areas Jefferson Healthcare was literally one of the very first in the nation to get the vaccine. And Clallam County was also ahead of the pack. So we received a disproportionate amount of vaccine early on, but now the rest of the state is catching up. So the state is reallocating, especially giving more to the urban counties, doing some big mass vaccination events in urban counties to try to get them caught up. So we're actually going to see a decrease in vaccine coming to Jefferson County probably for several weeks, and then it will even out. And we expect that at 100,000 doses a week, and if you figure just the eligible population, Jefferson County has about 12,000 residents who are 65 years of age or older, and Washington State has 1.2 million people. So we have almost exactly 1% of that population in the state. So we would potentially get 1,000 doses of vaccine per week. But remember the 12,000. It would, if everyone in that group wanted to be vaccinated, that would take 12 weeks. We expect vaccine volumes to increase. There will be new vaccines that will likely enter the market in April or so, possibly a little earlier, but it's going to take 4 to 7 months, we think, to really vaccinate everyone in Washington State. The state's goal is to get up to 45,000 doses per day. And we're currently at about 15,000 statewide. So we have to get three times as much vaccine to do that, to reach that target. And then they're thinking 5 to 7 months to vaccinate the 4.3 million Washington State residents that would get us up to that 70% population immunity threshold. So it's a very difficult thing to wait, you know, especially when you hear neighbors and see on social media other people you know have somehow gotten the vaccine. But it is simply impossible to vaccinate everyone at once. And like it or not, a lot of people are going to have to wait before enough vaccine is available for everyone to get it. One of the things I'm hearing more and more is this belief that, well, once I get vaccinated, you know, the pandemic is over for me. And that is really dangerous thing, because actually nothing changes after you get the vaccine. We don't know if a person might get low-grade infection and still be infectious. So all of the masking and distancing requirements are still required. You will not be allowed to go into a store or public place without a mask. If you're a close contact of a confirmed case, we will still require you to quarantine for 14 days, even if you're vaccinated. So nothing really changes except your personal risk of getting severe disease is dramatically reduced. So it's going to be crucially important that we maintain all of these transmission preventions probably until midsummer. So we don't get even more cases as we're getting folks vaccinated. Okay, so if there are any, I can try to go through a few of the KPTZ questions unless the board has anything they'd like to ask at this point.
Heidi and McCray. You're muted.
Sorry. Pull out your crystal ball, Dr. Locke. I've been asked by a number of folks, what is the prognosis for our beloved festivals, like the Wooden Boat Festival? That's what, in September? Is there any, when do you think that we might start talking about what's after phase two? Do you have any?
Yeah, those kind of late summer events are a possibility. I think there'd still be some restrictions to lessen the chance of outbreaks, but assuming that we're very close to that 70% or higher, and that is attainable by mid to late summer, then yes, those kind of things can resume. But probably with modifications, you know, more spacing, more ventilation, things like that. There will be people who are not vaccinated. We don't think there's any way that 100% of people would consent to vaccination, and it's always going to be voluntary. We're never going to require it.
Right.
I was curious, just Dr. Locke, about the, I guess, proportion in that 100,000 per week the state is getting of the vaccines. Is that counting both Pfizer and Moderna together? I'm just trying to think of the weekly capacity of the, I mean, of course, you know, if it's for getting 1,000 a week, that's, you know, less than the Jefferson Healthcare has been doing by themselves. And how many of those are going through the pharmacies? Moderna is going through the pharmacies. Can you just break that down a little bit so I can understand a little better the distribution of vaccine sites going forward?
So the 100,000 per week is both vaccines combined together. They expect some modest increases, 2 to 3% per week, and sometime in February it will start to ramp up even faster. So the state does expect to eventually be getting more like 45,000 a day, so three times what they're getting now. The allocation formulas are a mystery to us. But we do know what they are. This week it's going to be all Moderna vaccine. There'll be about 600 doses coming to Jefferson County. And they'll be spread out between three pharmacies, and then the hospital is going to get a small amount of Moderna vaccine. And then we are told that the booster dose allocations are done separately. So at one point, Jefferson Healthcare was kind of keeping a small reserve of vaccines so they could do the second dose. And the state told them, no, use all of your vaccine, and we will make sure you get the booster dose. So over this weekend, the hospital has now administered over 4,000 doses. And the healthcare providers and first responders, by and large, have completed their two-dose regimen. So they're fully immunized. Throughout that county, we're trying to coordinate our efforts. So the pharmacies, the hospitals, the health department, Willie and I are going to be working on a mass vaccination plan today. So we'll be ready when the supply appears and we can get significant amounts of the Moderna vaccine. We will start doing high school gymnasium type mass vaccination events. So all of that is ahead, but the timeline is entirely determined by the vaccine supply. And as you mentioned, the hospital's drive-through operation is very efficient. They hit over 400 doses a day, or close to 400 a day on several days last week. That's not optimal for them. I think they're the kind of the comfortable pace there is about 200 to 250 a day. But still, that, you know, 5 to 7 days a week, that's a pretty that can use almost all the vaccine. It works well for frail elders who they don't have to get out of their car. We can keep people separated. So we're going to want to keep that model of drive-through, but then add on other events as the supply allows.
And following up on that, do you still anticipate the Jefferson Healthcare, I'm going to ask you this every time I see you, sorry, do you still anticipate the Jefferson Healthcare website being a good one-stop shop to access the vaccine, whether it's at a pharmacy or Jefferson Healthcare?
Yes, that's what we proposed. The group, the now three pharmacies, health department, hospital, our regular meeting is today, so we'll go over that again. And that was our initial plan, is to use that as the one-stop shop. But you know, as this evolves, we'll add on other things. And you know, the pharmacies are certainly allowed to do whatever they want in terms of making things known. But we've strongly recommended to them they follow the same priorities that we're using elsewhere in the county, just to keep it as fair and consistent as possible.
Anything else for Dr. Locke before we move into maybe just high grade a few, Philip, and then Dr. Locke, if you would mind high grading a few KPTZ questions, so we're sure to leave time for Willie.
Yeah. I have a potential myth buster question, and that is an allegation by some that the state is holding back some vaccine that it's failed to distribute. Do you know any, is that true or false?
I believe that's false. I believe the state's getting it. In fact, by and large, the state doesn't even have the vaccine. They just coordinate the shipment. So the vaccines are shipped directly from the manufacturer to the place where they're going to be administered. Pfizer vaccine is directly from their factory. The Moderna vaccine is by this company called McKesson. But the state just handles the allocation, tells them where to ship it. And the state did need to divert a large amount to match the federal supply for nursing homes. They were, by taking some of their vaccine and matching a federal source, they were able to get a larger amount for the long-term care facilities.
Mm-hmm.
So a few questions. There was this question about, you know, how do you get infected? Are people being, you know, wildly irresponsible? That's a really important thing to think about, because we're mostly seeing infection as a result of unsafe behaviors. So people who are not masking, or have visitors who are not masking in the household. But there's also an element of bad luck to it, and that is just randomly encountering, you know, what we've come to think of as super spreaders. So people who don't have symptoms but nonetheless are infected and are shedding the virus. And the CDC now thinks that 59% of infections come from asymptomatic sources. So either people are going to develop symptoms, but they haven't yet. So they're in the 2 days or so before onset of symptoms, or they never develop symptoms. So it to me, that underscores the fact that you have to be vigilant all the time and be knowledgeable of how to protect yourself. And we should all know how to do that now. And it works. If you do it consistently, it does work. There was a question about information about the vaccine. And we asked, yes, don't don't call the scheduling lines for general information about the vaccine. The CDC has an excellent call-in information line. It's 1-800-CDC-INFO. And so 232-4636. It's staffed 24/7, and people can call in that if they want to talk to someone about risks and benefits of the vaccine, or you can talk to your healthcare provider during regular visit. But the lines that we are running are for scheduling the vaccine. There were some questions, why can't we start resuming our lives or having more people in our household, especially if everyone in that group is fully vaccinated? And the answer to that is we don't know enough about these vaccines yet to make those to do science-based guidelines. These vaccines were developed and implemented on an extraordinarily short timeline. And so we will have the answer to some of those questions about can a person still be infectious once they're vaccinated? We do know that 1 in 20 people who are vaccinated can get infection. So right now we're strongly urging people not to change things. Once we have solid data, though, we very well may modify some of the household guidelines and what you can do when vaccinated. What's especially dangerous right now, though, and I'm hearing people suggest this, is after their first dose, they feel like they're good to go and they can start expanding their social activities. And we think that is very unwise and unsafe. Just a final one, I'd say there was a question about this other criteria of multi-generational household, and are we going to follow that in the county? And the answer is yes. It's taken quite a while for the state to really define or to create what we call an operational definition, so something that we could understand and apply. But the two categories that seem really clear under multi-generational household is if you're a grandparent over age 50 and you are taking care of, you have custody of your grandchildren and taking care of them in the home, then you meet this multi-generational household criteria. And then also if you are a family member or a caretaker an elderly and dependent adult. So if you're over 50 and you're taking care of someone who might otherwise, be in a long-term care facility, but you're taking care of them at home, that's also meets the multi-generational definition. So as we understand that more, we will certainly apply it, because people in that category are in the B1 group and are eligible for vaccine, as well as people 65 years of age and older. And we will get to those populations as soon as we have vaccine to support it.
But Dr. Locke, is it important to also qualify who doesn't count in that category? Because some people read that and say, oh, if I'm caring for my own children, isn't that multi-generational if I'm over 50? And even though if you dig deeper, it's clear that that does not count. Or married couples, one of whom is over 75, one of whom is not. Neither of those qualify in that exemption, right?
Right. It's really the only two categories we think are grandparents taking care of grandchildren, and then you don't even have to be a relative, but if you are a caretaker over 50, and you are taking care of a dependent, elderly household member, you would qualify.
Great, thank you. Okay, anything else for Dr. Locke before we move over to Willie? Okay, thank you, Dr. Locke. Welcome, Willie.
Hey, thank you, Commissioner. So I think as folks might have seen or heard, Jefferson Healthcare has paused scheduling vaccine appointments for the time being due to lack of vaccine. So that's on hold for the time being, although they're hoping to get their shipment and resume that a little bit later this week. In the meantime, here at the EOC, we still do have volunteers staffing the phone bank. But again, at this time, they cannot schedule any appointments for the hospital drive-through line. I've made a call for volunteers the past couple of weeks, and we will continue to seek volunteers. We're doing fairly well, we feel, on the non-clinical side of things. So volunteers just to kind of perform general administrative tasks as a runner, help with traffic control, that kind of stuff. What we really still need are medically trained folks with active licenses, which is difficult since we're seeking out retired folks who are no longer actively practicing, but we're still hoping that they have an active license they can administer vaccine. So anyone that meets kind of that specific criteria, there's a wide range of what kind of medical training can permit you to deliver vaccine. MDs, RNs, EMTs with certain level of training, et cetera. So if you meet that criteria, you have an active license and you're available to help out, again, do pretty please reach out to us, jcdem@co.jefferson.wa.us. As you know, Dr. Washington mentioned, we're right now looking to help augment Jefferson Healthcare's vaccine program with volunteers. And then once we get more vaccine delivered into the county, we're going to be looking at larger mass community vaccination events, which we're also hoping to not just augment with volunteers, but really drive and fuel with a majority kind of volunteer workforce. So those of you that are medically trained, again, please do reach out. If you're non-medically trained but still feel you can contribute, please reach out as well. Everything from sitting here answering the phone, helping schedule appointments, to more physical stuff like working traffic control, we can still use help there. So please do reach out. I know that the question came up over the kind of one-stop shop information source. That remains Jefferson Healthcare's COVID-19 site, jeffersonhealthcare.org/COVID-19-vaccine. And again, for the time being, that's going to remain your best source of information, who's eligible, et cetera. And I did really want to address, Dr. Locke already hit on this point, but things are changing rapidly at the federal level, which means they change rapidly at the state level, which means they then change rapidly at the local level. So I understand folks' frustrations with the often conflicting information or fast-moving information. We're often frustrated here locally as well, because by the time we get the information in here locally or starting to implement change, something changes at the federal level and that the dominoes fall down again and things kind of get reworked. So my ask to everyone is you continue to tune into these Monday morning briefings. You continue to pay attention to that site. And for the time being, that'll be your best one-stop shop source of information. And just, bear with us more than anything. Again, where we get frustrated at times too, they call these things disasters for a reason. And so we're really doing our best, and we're trying to do better still in making this information as easy to find and as easy to consume as possible. So we'll keep you updated there. The last thing that I wanted to touch base on and really give a lot of credit to Dr. Locke and the public health team, as well as the entire team at Jefferson Healthcare. Jefferson County, per the Seattle Times, we actually rank 4th in the state for total vaccine doses given per 10,000 residents. Clallam County ranks 2nd. Wakayakum County is 1st on the smaller county down there in southwest Washington. But as Dr. Locke had kind of alluded to, we were able to get a vaccine relatively early. We've done a great job of putting it out there. And I think our 4th overall ranking is a testament to the work at Jefferson Healthcare and at Public Health in helping put that together. So, still a lot more work to be done. Thanks to everyone who has reached out, and I look forward to hearing from more of you.
Great. Questions for Willie? I have one. So part of the anxiety I'm hearing from folks is that, and this is older folks, that The appointments are currently being taken or not taken at the moment requires that, you know, when there's an opening, there's this mad rush that you can only sign up in one place online. And, you know, is there not a way to be kind of tiering and ranking people so that as vaccines come in, they're already prioritized and can be contacted instead of this mad rush when appointments get added and then whoever happens to be sitting at their computer is the first to get it? Is, you know, it would be great if we could take some of that anxiety out by having some prioritization done through a database portal of some sort. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, and, unfortunately, again, there are 12,000 folks in the county, 65 or older within this tiered system. And for us to then, take information from the bulk of those 12,000 and kind of pre-schedule them and then have a need to call them back and a need to work through that, this would be too great of a lift for a lot of our volunteer folks. We are available in the EOC to take appointments by phone. So you don't necessarily need internet access. You can call in our line and they'll walk you through the process and get you through your appointment. And I know, I actually believe the Olympic Area on Aging is actually looking to be able to offer that assistance as well and walk folks through their appointment if they're not able to do so online. But unfortunately, making some sort of contact list or some list that way would just be too difficult to then call back the bulk of those 12,000 people. And I know that there's, anxiety from folks, but one of the reasons the decision was made rather than open up that full 65-plus band to do 85-plus and then 80, and then 75 to open it up more deliberately and more slowly that way. So I apologize for that anxiety. I appreciate folks bearing with us on that. My ask is you do keep your eyes and ears open for when you are available. And then for those of you who don't have internet, please call into the EOC and we'll walk you through that process. And we've actually had a lot of folks who have had their kids or have had a younger friend or family member help them navigate that process. So if you're concerned in any way, unfortunately we can't pre-schedule you, but if you're concerned, reach out to us or have your friends and family reach out to us here at the EOC and we'll be sure to walk you through and make sure you get your appointment.
Right, and I just add, we're always open to good ideas, and this is an evolving situation, but what I really ask people to do, one KPTZ listener said they were feeling frustrated and hopeless, and we've also seen a lot of anger expressed, and those are just not appropriate in this setting. People are working incredibly hard, trying to be as fair and deliberate in what we're doing. I know the hospital especially has been trying to identify people who are very high risk for dying of COVID and reaching out to them, but we can't. There's limits to what we can do, and the hospital is committed to. They don't want to just serve their patients. They serve the whole county. This vaccine is for everyone in the county. So that's one of the reasons that the scheduling is the way it is to make it accessible for both for non-Jefferson Healthcare patients as well as their patients. But we'll as vaccine supplies increase. Things will get better, and we'll get more creative and hopefully efficient in doing this. But it's physically impossible to vaccinate 12,000 people with less than 1,000 doses a week, or all at once. In a way, people just have to do their best to accept those inherent limitations and be patient and remember that you can protect yourself from this. You've been doing it all along. We've been doing this for almost a year, is protecting ourselves. It just means we have to do that longer until there's adequate vaccine available.
And it seems to me it's you know, more important than ever to be knowing that we are taking care of each other in this process, you know, and part of the frustration with having a lot of anger, I think, directed towards folks who are working really hard on this is that, you know, those 12,000 folks are going to get it a whole lot earlier than the rest of us, you know, even than servers and restaurants and people who are really, you know, get a lot of public exposure. And I just really hope that people can continue to have a sense of, I will wait my turn. We want to protect the most vulnerable. And let's be really grateful that, that we're able to get it, you know, anytime soon. And I feel there's been a kind of a forgetting of that, taking care of each other as a community to get to that first help. Greg, did you have something?
Well, yeah, I want to echo what you said. You know, I think that it's taking a moment to appreciate where we are, and we have a vaccine that we're moving through as quickly as possible, and realizing the limitations is, and having grace as we all stand in line is important. And I was also curious, looking back at 1A, do you know what the rejection rate was? And was there any analysis on reasons that first responders chose not to take the vaccine when the opportunity was first presented?
That I do not know in terms of first responders. I know we've tracked the hospital personnel, so and they're at about 75% is what the uptake, as we call it, is, and that our projection was it was going to be about 70%. Not every, this is a brand new vaccine under an emergency use authorization, and not everyone wants to be at the front of that line, and that's okay. You know, that's why this is entirely an informed consent issue. But yeah, we're going to be meeting with the fire departments and the first responder network. So yeah, I would like to get more information about, you know, if people have concerns about this, we would like to get them all vaccinated. So if there's something we can do to allay their concerns, I'm very happy to do that.
Great, thanks.
Anything else? Okay, well, thank you for the update, and see you next week. Till then, everyone, stay patient and be glad that we're getting our elderly cared for. So thanks, everyone.
This is KPTZ Port Townsend. We've just heard the weekly public health updates on COVID-19 live from the Jefferson County Board of Commissioners meeting. A recording of today's reports will be available later today for streaming online at kptz.org. Thank you for listening and for supporting your local community radio station. To make a donation to KPTZ, please visit kptz.org.